Wait, so check your calendars, everyone. It is February 22, 2026.
Yep.
And if you've been feeling like the tech world has just been holding its collective breath for the last few months, well, I think we just heard the exhale.
Yeah, a massive exhale. Maybe a gasp, honestly.
Right, gasp is probably more accurate.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are looking at a huge stack of reports today, specifically centering around this document that just dropped this morning. It's titled, let me get it right, The Agentic Revolution, Hardware, Sovereignty, and the Silicon Supercycle.
And, I mean, I have to say, reading through it, it feels less like a traditional market report and more like, I don't know, a sci-fi novel that just happened to come true overnight.
It really does. It's wild. And I want to make sure you, the listener, really grasp the scale of this, because the core premise here is that we are crossing a very specific, very tangible threshold today.
Exactly. For the last few years, really since the early 2020s, we've been living in what the report calls the software cocoon.
The software cocoon, right.
Mm-hmm. Right. We've been chatting with bots, generating some cute images, maybe summarizing our emails. It's all been locked behind a screen. But the source material today makes one thing crystal clear. The era of chat is officially over.
Completely over.
We are now witnessing the invasion of agents.
And that's our mission for this deep dive. We need to unpack exactly how AI is moving from just, you know, answering our trivia questions to actually executing tasks.
Real physical tasks.
Yes, entering the physical world, reshaping the economy, and I still can't believe I'm saying this, literally watching you from your desk lamp.
It sounds so hyperbolic, I know. But when you look at the ambient AI specs in this report, it's quite literal. This isn't about software anymore. It's about sovereignty. It's about who or what is actually driving the machine.
Right. We've got Project Jarvis coming to life. We've got gray collar automation, a total rethink of what a smartphone even is. So let's not waste a second here. Let's start with the big headline from the report, which is the rise of the large action model.
Yeah, this is the fundamental shift. Because up until now, we've been obsessed with LLMs, large language models.
Right, the models that talk.
Exactly. They talk, they write, they code a little bit. But this report introduces us to OpenClaw. And OpenClaw isn't an LLM. It's a LAM, L-A-M, a large action model.
A large action model.
Yes. And the distinction is just crucial. An LLM tells you how to do something. A LAM just does it.
Okay, so let's unpack this OpenClaw protocol for a second, because the report specifically mentions that this isn't just a smarter chatbot. It says OpenClaw, quote, penetrates the OS kernel. That sounds aggressive.
It is aggressive, but in a functional way. Think about how you use a computer right now. You click icons, you open browsers, you type into text fields, you drag files around.
Sure.
OpenClaw has the power of execution. It doesn't just generate text for you to copy and paste. It performs the clicks. It performs the keystroke.
So it takes over the mouse.
Exactly. It understands the desktop environment exactly like a human does. It sees the submit button not as a string of text, but as a visual trigger.
So if I'm hearing this right, it's kind of like turning your PC into a self-driving car. I don't have to drive the mouse anymore. I just tell the computer where to go, and it steers.
That's a great analogy. And the sources actually point out that this is effectively the Project Jarvis moment.
Yeah.
You know, from the internal leaks.
Oh, right. The Marvel Cinematic Universe reference. I was hoping you'd catch that.
Yeah, it's that dream of having a digital butler that actually runs your system, not just talks to you about it. But, you know, there is a big difference between a movie and reality. In the movie, Jarvis doesn't crash the car.
Right. And that's the tension right now, isn't it? Because the report highlights that Silicon Valley investors are currently in a state of high alert confusion.
Total confusion. They don't know which ecosystem to back right now because the metric for success has changed overnight. It's no longer about who writes the best poetry or generates the funniest image. The clear winner is going to be determined by what they call agentic pragmatism.
Agentic pragmatism. I really like that term. It sounds very utilitarian.
It is. It simply means, can this thing replace human intervention in a real-time workflow? OpenClaw proves that real power lies in execution. It's the first layer of an operating system that might eventually just replace the way we think about Windows or macOS.
It's debugging your life in real time.
Yeah, it's the difference between asking a colleague, hey, how do I fix this spreadsheet, versus handing them your laptop and saying, fix it. OpenClaw is the guy grabbing the laptop.
That is a massive shift. But here's where it gets really interesting for me. If the software is becoming action-oriented, it needs a body, right? It can't just float in the cloud forever if it wants to really help us in the physical world.
Absolutely.
And according to this report, OpenAI, the company we all think of as the chat guys, is doing something completely unexpected with hardware.
This was probably the most surprising part of the entire dossier for me. We tend to think of OpenAI as a pure software house, but the intel here reveals they have assembled a team of over 200 hardware specialists. Yes. And these aren't just fresh grads. We're talking former Apple industrial designers, Tesla optics engineers.
I mean, 200 people is not a hobby project. That is a full division. And the report says their goal is incredibly surgical. They want to kill the smartphone.
It's a bold claim, but look at the logic behind it. The smartphone is the current gateway to all our technology. If OpenAI wants to control the user experience in the physical dimension, they can't rely on Apple or Samsung screens forever.
Right. They're currently just tenants in someone else's building.
Exactly. They need their own gateway. They need to exist in the physical dimension.
So let's look at the devices mentioned here, because we aren't just talking about building a better phone. The report lists smart speakers, which, okay, that's standard. But then it mentions AI-powered glasses serving as eyes, and this is the crazy part, desk lamps.
Yes, the desk lamps.
Equipped with GPT-based vision to serve as ears and eyes in your office. I have to ask, why a lamp?
Think about the ergonomics of work. Where do you process most of your information?
Usually sitting at a desk.
Right. A lamp has the perfect vantage point. It's top down, it's always plugged into the wall, so it doesn't have battery anxiety like a phone. It can house powerful local compute in the base, and it can see everything, your handwritten notes, the book you're referencing, the screen of your laptop.
So this is the concept of ambient AI.
Correct. The strategy here is to move AI out of the pocket and into the environment. Imagine you're wearing these glasses. You walk through a city. The glasses are constantly autopsying the environment.
Autopsying it.
Yeah, analyzing what you see, reading signs, identifying products, spotting navigation paths. And all of this happens without you ever typing a prompt.
That's the key right there.
Yeah.
Without a prompt.
Precisely. It's a true merger of the digital and physical realms. If your desk lamp can see your paperwork and your glasses can see your screen, the AI has stereoscopic context. It doesn't need you to explain what you're working on. It just sees it.
It removes the friction of asking for help.
Yeah.
The help is just there. It's ambient. It's fascinating. But also, let's be real. A desk lamp watching me work. That is a very 2026 sentence to say out loud. It sounds incredibly convenient, but also a little bit like a panopticon.
Well, it is a trade-off. The report frames it as cognitive offloading. You trade some privacy for the ability to never have to organize a file or remember a citation ever again. The lamp sees the invoice on your desk, matches it to the email on your screen, and executes the payment via OpenClaw.
Wow.
You didn't do anything. You just sat there.
I feel like I need to clean my desk just thinking about it. But obviously, the legacy phone giants aren't just going to roll over and let the lamp take over, right? We have to talk about Samsung. Because while OpenAI is trying to kill the phone, Samsung is trying to turn the phone into a command center.
That's a really great way to put it. Samsung sees the threat. They know they can't just be a dumb screen anymore. So they are transforming Galaxy AI into what the report calls a multi-agent ecosystem.
And the big news here is their strategic alliance with Perplexity.
Right. This is the agentic arbitrator model. And it is really smart strategic thinking. Samsung realizes that no single AI model can be the best at everything. OpenAI is great at some things, Google is great at others, so the Galaxy device itself becomes the arbitrator.
Okay, so how does that work in practice?
You ask a question or give a command, and the phone decides which agent gets the job.
So it's kind of like a general contractor. If I want a new kitchen, I tell the contractor, and then he hires the best plumber and the best electrician.
Exactly that. If you need high-precision, real-time search, the phone routes the task directly to Perplexity. If you need summarization or creative writing, it might route that to an internal on-device model.
It's acting as the brain that manages the other brains.
Yes, and the report calls this a defensive wall. It's Samsung's defense against the centralized monopolies of Google and Apple. By proving that the future lies in agentic diversity, meaning having a team of specialized soldiers rather than one massive generalist model, they keep their hardware relevant.
I love that concept. Agentic diversity. It makes so much sense. Why use a sledgehammer when you need a scalpel, right?
Right.
But speaking of specialized soldiers, we need to move from our pockets and our desks to the actual workplace, the factories, the banks, what the report calls the gray-collar world.
This is where the economic numbers get really staggering. We're moving the conversation to the new partnership between Anthropic and Infosys.
Infosys and Anthropic. So you have a massive IT services company teaming up with the makers of the Claude models. What exactly are they building?
They are targeting gray-collar automation. Now, we've heard about blue-collar automation for decades, robots on the assembly line, right?
Right.
And we know white-collar automation CEOs using AI to draft speeches. But gray-collar is the middle layer. It's the analyst, the middle manager, the logistics coordinator.
The people who make the spreadsheets and track the actual shipments?
Oh, correct. The report describes using Claude models to automate complex operations. We aren't talking about writing polite emails anymore. We are talking about identifying suspicious transactions in a banking ledger in real time. We are talking about optimizing factory lines based on live telemetry data.
So instead of a human manager looking at a report from yesterday to try and fix a bottleneck today, the agent sees the bottleneck happening right now in real time and just fixes it.
That is the core of the business value section in this report. It eliminates human error, and more importantly, it eliminates lag time. It's basically autonomous exception handling. For a global enterprise, this represents trillions of dollars in savings.
Trillions?
Yes. These agents are making decisions based on data streams that are just too fast and too voluminous for a human brain to process. It's not just replacing a worker, it is upgrading the entire decision-making architecture of the company.
It really sounds like the middle manager is just becoming code.
In many ways, yes. The agent becomes the infrastructure. And this creates what the report warns as the hollowing of the middle.
Because if you automate the entry-level analyst and the coordinator, you lose that layer of human apprenticeship.
Exactly. But from a pure efficiency standpoint, the market is demanding it.
Okay, so we've got agents on our desktops, agents in our lamps, agents running our factories. All of this software, all of this action requires power. It requires a brain. And that leads us to this section of the report on the economic engines, specifically NVIDIA.
The wealth reactor, as the report calls it.
The wealth reactor. I mean, every year people say, oh, NVIDIA has peaked. And every year the deep dives say, nope, not yet. What is the outlook for late 2026 here?
The term used here is the silicon supercycle. The report suggests essentially infinite demand for what they call Surrogate class servers and AI native infrastructure. But here is the critical nuance. NVIDIA's dominance isn't just in training these models anymore.
Right. Everyone knows you need NVIDIA to build the AI in the first place.
But now they're dominating inference at the edge.
And inference meaning the actual running of the AI, right?
Yeah.
When the agent is out in the world doing the work.
Yes. Training is a finite process. You train the model once, maybe update it periodically, but inference is infinite. Every time OpenClaw clicks a mouse, every time that Samsung phone routes a request to Perplexity, every time the factory optimizes an assembly line, that is inference.
And every single one of those actions requires silicon.
Exactly. The report states that NVIDIA GPUs are now recognized as the new currency of the digital age. It explicitly says that betting against them in 2026 is a strategic failure.
Because even if you manage to build your own chip, the software ecosystem they've built is just too much of a moat.
As long as agents need silicon to survive, NVIDIA is the oxygen in the room.
But there is another economic engine mentioned here, one that I really hadn't thought of as an AI company in the same way. The report calls Amazon the hidden hero of generative AI.
This is a fascinating sleeper hit. While everyone else was watching the chatbot wars and looking at text generation, Amazon deployed Rufus.
The shopping agent.
And look at the stats in the report. Rufus contributed 1.4% to Amazon's gross merchandise volume in Q4 2025 alone.
1.4% of Amazon's total volume. That is a lot of money. That's bigger than the total revenue of most Fortune 500 companies.
It's massive, and it proves that horizontal agents, meaning agents connected directly to the consumer wallet, are the ultimate monetization tool. This brings up the concept of anticipatory commerce.
Anticipatory commerce. I saw that in the notes. This is the idea that the agent knows what I need before I even realize I need it.
Exactly. The report goes into the consumer cycle. These agents know when your fridge is empty and they order replacements before you even notice. They know your usage rates, your budget, the delivery logistics.
That is total mastery over the consumption cycle. Think about that for a second. If Rufus knows your buying habits, your consumption rate, and your budget, it doesn't really need to sell you anything anymore. It just fulfills the need automatically.
Right.
It completely removes the decision-making process from shopping. You don't go shopping anymore. The goods just appear at your door because the agent managed the flow.
That is incredibly convenient, sure. But it also creates a lock-in that is just unprecedentedly powerful for Amazon. If you trust the agent to handle the basics, you stop looking at prices. You stop comparing brands. You just consume whatever the agent selects.
Wow. So we have covered a lot of ground here today. We've got lamps watching us work. phones managing a team of AI contractors, and Amazon buying our toothpaste before we run out. Let's try to pull this all together for the listener. The report ends with a command center verdict. What are the main pillars we really need to take away from this?
I see four clear takeaways from this text. First, the agentic revolution. We have decisively moved from talk to action. OpenClaw isn't just telling you how to book a flight, it's booking it. If a model can't execute the click, it's obsolete.
Right. Action over words. The toy phase of AI is over.
Second, the physical shift. The software cocoon is broken. OpenAI is building actual hardware. The mobile phone is under attack. AI is entering our biological space through glasses and ambient sensors. It's no longer just on the screen, it's in the room with us.
The invasion of the physical world, check.
Third, NVIDIA's reign. Silicon is still king. The smarter and more autonomous these agents get, the more compute they need. It's a direct correlation. Silicon is the hard physical resource that limits the soft power of AI.
And finally, number four.
Open ecosystems. This is the Samsung and Perplexity model. The future belongs to platforms that can unite multiple specialized agents rather than trying to force one giant monolithic brain to do absolutely everything. We are moving from a monarchy of intelligence to a democracy of agents.
It really feels like the landscape has completely transformed since the start of 2025. We aren't just playing with new tech tools anymore. We are living inside a system of agents.
That is the reality of 2026. We are building the infrastructure that makes us obsolete as managers.
Which brings me to a thought I've been mulling over while listening to you break all this down. If agents like Rufus can spend our money before we even know we need something, and agents like OpenClaw operate our computers for us, and agents in the factory manage the actual workers, are we just becoming the managers of our own lives rather than the operators?
It's a really profound question.
I mean, what happens to human agency when the agent takes over the action? If I'm not driving the mouse and I'm not picking out the groceries, am I just the person signing the checks at the end of the month? It feels like we're moving to a world where we are just the board members of our own existence.
That is the ultimate trade-off of the agentic era. We gain massive efficiency, we gain time, and we gain these digital superpowers via these tools. But we lose the granular control of the process. We become directors, not actors. And the real question is, do we trust the cast we've hired?
And that is the question to leave you with today. Do you trust the cast? Do you trust Rufus with your wallet and OpenClaw with your mouse? Something for you to think about as you go about your day, probably while an AI watches you from a desk lamp.
Just remember to wave at it occasionally, or, you know, unplug it if you need some alone time.
Exactly. Be polite to the machine, but keep your hand on the plug. That's it for this deep dive into the agentic revolution. We encourage you to debug your own workflow and see where these agents might fit in. Stay tuned for the next one.
See you next time.